to LA Miracle Cure. And I'm your host, Barbara. Now, in studio today, we have the pleasure of having, now I know you've all heard of them, but they're here today with us, the Pott Brothers at Law. Let's perhaps start with you, Mark. Mark and I have had an extensive background in entertainment. If you kind of bring us forward, if you can, in a couple of minutes about your entertainment background and then how you moved over into law and working in the cannabis industry.
Well, as you know, I started acting when I was a kid and did a lot of musical theater, a lot of different film and television work over the years. And at some point in time, when I was about 19 or 20, I got real sick of the rat race and the auditioning and the casting couches and all of the Me Too. I have my own story that I published about that and decided I wanted to write and produce my own films and plays. And I was trying to figure out how I could do that. And of course, to do that, you need money. And I thought, how can I make money? And I looked to my older brother, who was an attorney, and he said, well, why don't you stop acting for a while and act like you're a lawyer? That's what I do every day, he said. I act like I'm a lawyer. I get up in front of the judge. And so I went to law school. I put everything on hold, and I went to law school. And when I came out and became an attorney in 1996, which coincidentally is exactly when Prop 215 came out, I opened my own practice following in my brother's footsteps, started to make some money, created a production company, started making films and producing plays and independent films, which I did for a good 10 to 15 years while I was practicing law. And during that time period, my brother and I sharing an office space. Well, actually, he had an office and he let me come use space in there. He's such a great brother.
Oh, that's right. Isn't that wonderful to have a big brother? Yes. Go ahead.
And we started practicing law out of the same office. We had different practices, law offices of Craig Wasserman, law offices of Mark Wasserman. And then over time, my brother's son, my nephew, decided he wanted to be in this cannabis business. And that was probably about 10 years ago or so. And we said, look, if you're going to be doing this, you need to do it right. And we need to learn how to be able to defend you if you get arrested and charged with felonies. And we became proficient at the California cannabis laws that were in existence, which began with Prop 215, Senate Bill 420, and the Attorney General guidelines. And we started helping my nephew get along in his business. And over the years, he would have end up getting arrested, charged with multiple felonies, multiple times. We got them all dismissed. And we then decided to listen to my nephew, who told us to get on Instagram 2 years ago. We didn't know what it was. And we took a long-standing little joke between us, which was that we're brothers, we smoke pot, and we're lawyers. We're the Pott Brothers at Law. And we actually made cards about 10, bad out 8 years ago, and never really did anything with it until we created the Pott Brothers at Law Instagram account 2 years ago, and took us by complete surprise what Instagram was and how it worked. And now here we are today hosting an FM radio talk show, Cannabis Talk 101, and being interviewed by you.
I love it. And I want to say hashtag me too on the Instagram piece. I mean, it's like a learning curve that you must get into, because I found that most of the business behind cannabis, believe it or not, is in the Instagram format. Now, Mark, thank you for bringing us forward. Craig, I want to go to you. I want to welcome you to LA Miracle Cure. And I want you to tell me, if you can, a little bit about what is your interaction? How does an attorney go from representing people and making motions and doing all this to working with such a gray area of law, which is the law that was not in existence for cannabis.
There's a big misconception as to this gray area prior to 1118. There really wasn't a gray area as far as we were concerned. If you followed, people come in all the time and say, I'm Prop 215 compliant, or a store says, I'm Prop 215 compliant. You know that either them or their attorneys don't know what they're talking about, because Prop 215 merely gave people the right to be a patient and get a recommendation and have cannabis. There was no vehicle to get it to each other. So SB 420 came out and said, if you collectively or cooperatively get together, you can do this. And it was like a one paragraph in SB 420 that tasked the attorney general with guidelines, which were 11, 12 pages. And it said exactly how to be a proper medical marijuana business all these years. So we've helped people to get in strict compliance with what those guidelines were. Mm. And, I mean, so we always said we didn't think there's a gray area. We always felt that there was a lot of attorneys out there who chose an easier entity to set people up as, because they can make more money doing it.
Well, now, and it, now there
and
you
that's
go.
That's what really created what maybe you think is the gray area.
Mm-hmm. Now, there you go. Because as I've been hosting this show, as you also have Cannabis 101, which I watch, you're also on Celestial Radio, which is, you know, the FM dial. And it's very interesting because what you say and how you say it and how you portray yourselves is much different than what other attorneys do when they ask for money, when they ask for a retainer to help you build your cannabis business. Because really, when you look at the cannabis industry, there are cultivation, manufacturing, distribution, testing, dispensary, and of course, the micro business. This is right. How it has morphed into, realistically speaking, in California, and became legal for adult use on the 1st of January. So, Mark, I want to come back to you. I want you to tell me a little bit about the marijuana, medical marijuana piece, if you can, in 2 minutes. And then I want to go to Craig. And Craig, I want you to bring us up to date with what is adult use or recreational marijuana, because we all want to know.
Well, medicinal in terms of use hasn't really changed much. And we get a lot of questions from people. Should I get my physician's recommendation? Should I get my county card? And the answer is yes, because if you have your physician's recommendation and you're using medicinally, the rules are different. You can possess up to 8 ounces. You can grow yourself as much as you medically need. And when we talk about that, the purpose of being able to use what you medically need is so that you can defend yourself if you're arrested. Because in the eyes of the law, it's still a crime first. And we have to get rid of this notion that it's legalized. It is not legalization. All over social media, all over the media, they tout it as California is legalized, which is the furthest from the truth, because why are people still getting arrested and going to jail? We deal with that every day. It's legalized when people stop getting arrested. So for that, it's we refer to it as decriminalized, partial legalization. Being able to, as I said, possess up to 8 ounces, grow as much as you medically need. And if you get busted growing 30 plants in your home, then you have to be able to prove that you medically need it by bringing in doctors, reports, experts to show how you break down your 30 plants into rubs, into oils, food, teas, however you're going to use it over the course of a period of time. And so the other thing that you need to know as a patient, if you get your county card, which is different from a physician's recommendation, you got to go to the county, you're going to be able to save on the sales and use tax when you go in to purchase from a medicinal shop.
Okay, so, now stop right there. County card. different from the physician's recommendation card. So where do you get a county card?
Department of Health in the county that you live in. You would take your physician's recommendation down there, fill out their application, which you can actually do online. If you Google MMID program, California, it'll come right up and show you how you can get ready to go down to the Department of Health in your county and get that county card.
Oh, wow. That's great information. You know, Craig, I just wanted to ask, because no one, the reason why we have this radio show, the reason why there's Cannabis 101 is because nobody's going to get this phone book of laws dropped off at your doorstep. The laws are like hidden. So why don't you kind of unpack for us, what does it mean, recreational use of marijuana? What does that mean?
Well, it's a misnomer. It really, the it's called the Adult Use Act. So people, it's interchangeable, recreational, adult use. I mean, people use both. But technically, the law that passed allowing people 21 and over to possess up to 28 grams of flower and 8 grams of concentrate is
adult use.
Recreational, it puts a negative stigma on the whole system because it makes it seem like we're having one big party. It's not recreational alcohol you go to drink.
I mean, so yeah, it's a lot. Some other states use the word recreational. People in the news use recreational, but it's really, you know, adult use. An adult should have the ability to choose whatever they want to ingest in their body, be it alcohol, be it marijuana, opiates. It's all the same. It's adult use of that plant.
Okay.
And here's one other thing to interject. When people refer to it as recreational adult use, people who have been using it and they say, I'm recreationally using it, they're not. They're using it medicinally.
They're self-medicating.
They don't even know that they're self-medicating.
Yeah, we didn't know we were self-medicating all these years, kept us sane.
Wow. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I had to read the three different sets of regulations, over 300 and something, almost 400 pages of over-regulated nonsense. Some places it doesn't make sense. The regulations we have today for 1118, post-1118, are still actually emergency regulations. They're not the final, but it's what we have right now to go by, and that's all we have to do. I tell clients all the time, you know, don't kill the messenger.
Well, I love the way you say emergency regulations, meaning that it's a work in progress. What I found
Correct.
To be very interesting is the capital of California is actually in Sacramento, where I'm from, you know, Bay Area, Northern California. But what I was really impressed with, and friend to the show, who we refer to as the King of LA, Mr. Virgil Grant, was our first flagship guest on our show. And he and his story of being berated by the feds, doing 6 years in federal prison, I mean, and then being able to turn around and now craft the laws to allow people opportunities to make what they say in Los Angeles is going to be a $5 billion industry in this year alone, I found was phenomenal. So when we come back, I really want to talk to you a little bit about what happened in the past, like let's say with cities like Oakland. We already know that California's number one export is cannabis. And we also know that it is the sixth largest economy in the world, bar none. And so we need to find out what happened with Oakland, what happened with LA that really spurred this new emergence of all these young people who now get a shot at making $1 billion. So we will be right back with the Pot Brothers at Law. And you're listening to LA Miracle Cure.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. news blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, we're back with the Pot Brothers at Law. And I really want to know. So I thought people were supposed to be decriminalized. Let's talk about the criminalization of marijuana. Who wants to take that over?
Sure. We believe it started, there's a lot of theories on when it started. One of those theories is when prohibition of alcohol ended and you had Randolph Hearst with the paper companies, the newspapers, the mills, the logging, and then you had hemp potentially coming in. They had to go after something and they chose the war on marijuana. And then demonized it with reefer madness. And that's what we've been fighting an uphill battle ever since. And you know, we don't really want to get too much into the politics of things, but there's people who think that people are making a lot of money off of the prisons, the disproportionate impact on minorities. It was ridiculous. I mean, my kid as well was up on felonies for providing medicine to patients who had verified medical conditions. It was horrible then. 64 gives you a roadmap to either lessen a charge, get you out of jail, lessen a charge, or get something completely dismissed, depending on what the crime was when it happened, as what it would be today under 64. We've had a few people get those reduced. We don't see a lot of people coming forward, though. We don't understand why there isn't more people who could get felonies potentially down to a ticket. Back in the day, if you sold one-eighth, if you sold a quarter ounce of marijuana, that was a felony. Now you can give away up to 28 grams. So, and anything, and if you try to sell it without a license under an ounce, it's a ticket. Anything over an ounce is a misdemeanor.
Ah, so over...
The sad part is, mm-hmm. So 64 decriminalized marijuana, made legal to have under 28 grams, like I said earlier. So there still are marijuana crimes, but it was supposed to be capped off at misdemeanors. So it didn't matter if you were selling 10 pounds, that's a misdemeanor. There's no felony category anymore in the marijuana penal code laws. What the DA's got cute, and we've had a few of these, actually our associate has had one of these thrown out, is now the DA's are getting cute because they're upset about their marijuana cases getting thrown out because it's legal or it's only a misdemeanor now. They want a felony. They're throwing in a conspiracy to commit misdemeanors, which is a felony.
Ah, and that is another thing I found out just recently. That if you're a cultivator and your runoff goes into a stream, that's a felony. So meaning...
And what was that again?
Meaning that if you're a cultivator, let's say you're in the Emerald Triangle. We've had guests on from the Emerald Triangle in Humboldt counties. And if the water that you use and whatever other things you use to make your plants grow slides down into the water stream that goes into the natural assessment of the land, that's a felony. So
correct.
It's
like using electricity illegally. That's a felony.
Yes.
So there's different ways to go about it, but as far as the actual marijuana laws, there are no more felonies for actually under the penal code out as it previously existed. But now they're trying to backdoor it by having these misdemeanors to commit the felony, a conspiracy to commit the misdemeanors.
Okay.
So if you have three people selling a little bit of weed, that could potentially be a felony now.
Okay. So now I want to go to Mark. Mark, okay. So we get it. But now if you want a license to be legal or quasi-legal or emergency regulations from the state of California, and you want to be in compliance, That means that Uncle Charlie, that gave you the $100,000 because he believes in you, his fingerprints have to be registered. That means your neighbor, that means the landlord, that means yourself, that means your high school buddies. Everybody that's involved with your LLC must be disclosed. So is that also a RICO Act?
If you're a 20% owner or more.
If you're what?
A 20% owner or more. If you're just a straight-up loan, you don't have to.
If it's a straight-up loan, you don't have to disclose.
Correct.
Very.
But if you're 20% or more owner of the entity owning the license, then you have to go through the life scan and all that good stuff.
I see. So, Mark, unpack for us the RICO Act. Because the RICO Act is technically how you are in conspiracy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Well, go ahead.
That is a way for them to show that a criminal enterprise is, at a federal level, working together to create a criminal conspiracy and that criminal enterprise. Now, we've actually heard some civil lawsuits that were going on up in Colorado with regards to the complaints of the businesses causing nuisance, smell, and things of that nature. And they were actually trying to use the RICO statute in some civil cases. I don't know how that turned out or what the status of that is, but the idea that the cannabis industry is wrapped around criminal enterprise is just ridiculous.
And
I mean, so the conspiracy to commit misdemeanors is similar to, at the state level, what RICO is at the federal level.
I see. And that's what turns a misdemeanor into a felony.
Correct.
Wow.
So until there's a, are you familiar with CCHI?
No, I'm not. Go ahead. Tell us.
CCHI 2020. It is a grassroots initiative. It's based on Jack Herrera, which is one of the pioneers in the cannabis industry. And it's basically a one-page citizens initiative that literally wipes all the penal code, the whole penal code marijuana out of the penal code. So there is no more violations of any criminal type. And it literally forces the judiciary to let people out, as opposed to people having to file petitions. And it's so grassroots that it just, people think it's never going to make it. But everybody complained about Prop 64, and we've told the younger generation as much as we can. And the older generation, if every single person out there who's in the closet about smoking cannabis went ahead and signed this petition, we would literally free the weed. You can, Instagram, I think it's at CCHI 2018 or 2020. And from there, you can probably, there's a link to go check them out. But the problem is, and this is the sad part about currently, it unfortunately is turning into somewhat of a money game, because the clients who are at the mid-level of this thing, it's very difficult to get in compliance with current laws, because we only have a third, maybe less than a third of 487 cities in California, and less than a third have allowed cannabis businesses. And in order to get your state license, you need a county, city permit or other authorization to have that business there.
Okay, let me just hold you right there. All right, so we saw in Las Vegas, people went, I mean, it was nobody in LA. You could do 85 on the freeway on the 10 because everybody went to Las Vegas to celebrate their legalization over the 4th of July. Now, I noticed that the commissioner for Los Angeles, Kat Packard, released a statement saying, don't line up because it's not going to be that way here. Now, we have 88 cities in LA, what's considered to be Los Angeles. And there's only 4 dispensaries, and they're in West Hollywood, that literally right now have that ability to sell adult use. My question to you is, do you think it was deliberate that they slowed this down because they're not ready to issue, or do you think they're holding back? What's your opinion?
No, what I said was the reason is these cities have jumped, the ones that like LA, waited to come up with their regulations and then said, okay, everybody's got to stop until we finalize the regulations. So some of the cities kind of sat on it, but I mean, like you said, in Orange County, other than Santa Ana, you got to go down to Desert Hot Springs, Coachella Valley. It's ridiculous. It's not that they slowed it down. The difference between here and Vegas was Vegas already had an infrastructure of regulated medical marijuana shops all over the place. They were already regulated, licensed, running. They probably got most, we don't do any kind of Vegas law, but they shut down the rogue ones, and over a few years, now they had a regulated medical marijuana system with stores, and then so they could literally flip the switch and go, okay, here's your adult use license. Now you can sell it to people 21 and over without a rec. Now, so in California, like I said, it goes back. It's not the state, even though maybe in 64 the state should have been a little tougher on the cities who want to ban it, but every city ran to ban it near the end of last year because they were afraid if they didn't, they didn't have anything in place, the state rules control. So they all ran to ban it, and then slowly cities undid it, passing ordinances or a voter initiative. And we still have, you know, I mean, literally a few handfuls of cities that are handing out licenses. So it's the city's fault. It's all this old school city councilmen who aren't listening to the will of the voters, and most of these cities voted for it for 64, and these guys are still banning it. I think the dominoes are going to start to fall when they see, hey, oh my God, the sky isn't falling.
Right.
You know what? It's safer to have a dispensary in your neighborhood than not.
Okay, now let me ask you this question. All right, so we know that the, we've talked a little bit about what's happening with the city, county, and on the state level. We also know that this is a federal Schedule I drug. So we just heard from Jeff Sessions. And Jeff Sessions is saying, we're going to allow the state attorney to make the decision on who he wants to go after. And he can have the discernment of who that might be. And we're going to pull back the COLAC. Could you gentlemen explain to us in 2 minutes or less, what is the COLAC? What were the Obama legalities that allowed this to go on and not be prosecuted? And who is this person that now in California has the right to make the decision of who they go after?
So let's start with the Cole memo. It was the ex-attorney general for Obama who basically wrote that if you're in compliance with your state laws that allow adult use or medical, actually at the time there was no adult use anywhere, so it was all medical, then the state's attorney generals should not be able to go after them. That was supported by none other than Dana Rohrabacher, and initially a congressman by the name of Farr, called the Rohrabacher-Farr Act, which was an amendment to the spending bill for the last 10 years or so, I think. 2014, excuse me. And what that did was, when you probably saw the newspapers in 2014 that said they defunded the war on marijuana. And the spending bill put into law that the Attorney General's office, DEA, cannot spend a dime to prosecute somebody who is in compliance with their state marijuana laws. Mm. And now that's been carried over until now. Now it's the Rohrabacher-Blumenauer Act, and they're trying to get it into the actual spending bill. It's been the last few times they extended the budget, it stayed in there. And but all that aside, it's the people have to revolt against their state, federal elected officials. If your state has medical or adult use, that Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter who they are, should be marching up those steps and descheduling this thing like it should have been a long time ago, but these politicians are afraid of backlash. We're trying to get the word out that backlash is going to be you're going to get voted out. Dana Rohrabacher told us that in an interview. That's all politicians know. You're going to vote them out. Flood the phone lines. Flood the emails. We shout this out to our 100,000 so people, you know, constantly that you don't think your voice, you know, it doesn't matter, but it does. Like in, I think it was Virginia, one vote. No one can tell me their one vote doesn't matter anymore. One vote decided it was a tie.
Right.
If one person had gotten off their rump either on one side or the other, you know, they would have won instead of a tiebreaker where they pulled something out of a hat.
Right.
So I'll get off my soapbox.
I got it. But now, so who is this U.S. or rather California attorney? I understand there's like four districts in California. Could you explain that to me, Mark? What are these districts? And who is this person that's going to be deciding who to go after?
The attorney, Xavier Becerra is the attorney general in California.
No, we're talking about the federal attorney general who has offices all over the country. So it's a federal attorney general. I'm not sure of the name of the one in California. I mean, there's four of them. And the one you're referring to, I think I read the article where he said that he wasn't going to change his procedure. They're going to look for the cartel, the people moving stuff out of state, things that they're still going to look for. And it didn't sound like they were going to go after people at the state level who are in strict compliance with their state laws. But they have that right now, too. If they decide that, you know, maybe a dispensary has five stores, they have a chain. I mean,
yes.
Who knows what they're going to do?
Right.
Now they have the ability to actually do that. Well, the Rohrabacher Amendment's still in. They still can't spend money on prosecution. Sessions can't get around that. So if that continues to stay in the bill or in the spending bill, then it doesn't matter what Sessions wants or says they can do. They won't be able to fund those prosecutions. He went to Congress to ask them to rescind the Rohrabacher thing. And the Congress wouldn't do it. I mean, Congress now has to just go, you know what? We're going to deschedule it. Leave it up to the states. It's a states' right issue, and the Republicans are in charge, and they're Mr. States' rights, so you can't pick and choose what you want states' rights for. And that's exactly what they're doing. And hopefully, I mean, a lot of Republicans are very, very upset, especially the ones from Colorado, and there's other ones that are calling for his firing.
Well,
based on, like, rescinding this when there's so many progressive states. I mean, the freight train has left the building. There's 40 states or so that have medical or adult use.
Exactly.
It's maddening.
And here's the other thing. They've already in Denver, we know. We've had friends on the show from Denver. And they're at $1 billion and they pay taxes. They're prepaying by quarter to the federal government.
Correct.
And to the state government, their city, the local tax. I mean, oh my goodness. They have like almost 1,000 dispensaries in Denver. And it's amazing. Now, in Los Angeles, we have about 2,300 dispensaries, whether they be online dispensaries, rogue dispensaries, this, that, and the other. I mean, it's kind of hard to say who's what. But I understand that these dispensaries are going to be closing. So when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, LA and how are we people that want to be in the industry, how do we put ourselves together when there's property pimps, there's the city pimps? I mean, there are all these gray areas that are really making it difficult for the small business guy to get started in cannabis. So we'll be right back, and we're here with the Pot Brothers at Law.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
The Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, and we're back. Mark, what is really happening on a local level? Now, I'm talking about Los Angeles, where when a person who, let's say, has a mom and pop business, they've filed for maybe three of the licenses, they've got a farm, they're growing, they're making a quick tea or a delivery system like a rub for people with arthritis, and they've got a great product. They got a few edibles for people with cancer and kids with seizures. And then they go looking for property because your license is tied to your property. They find a city that is friendly. And then all of a sudden, the rent is three times the normal amount. What would you say as an attorney representing the client to a property pimp?
Well, so, you know, first of all, Barbara, to address some of the things that you just said, we talk to people every single day who have these mom and pop shops, and they call asking, how can I get completely legitimate? I've been doing this for 5 years, for 10 years, so on and so forth. And then I have to have the conversation. Actually, it's not even a conversation. It's me telling them the hard, cold facts that, one, you need to get property in a zoned area. And if you can find property in a zoned area, and what you just mentioned about the property pimps, if you go to a city before a green zone hits and you want to rent a spot, it'll be maybe $2,500. Then when the green zone hits the next day, it's $7,500 a month. And so it's exorbitant what these landlords are doing. And, property values just skyrocket.
I mean, the sad part is people call us up and they think because they have their seller's permit or tax certificate that that's a license. It's not. Prior to 1/1/18, other than a handful of cities, if you were operating as a cooperative corporation, like we have said, then you can defend yourself from criminal accusations and have, you know, provide medicine to patients under that model. But that doesn't carry over into today. So no one had a license before. If you have an actual license, the license goes with the premise. So people who had businesses, grows, manufacturers, you know, they're out until they find a property in a zone that allows it. And the problem with these property pimps, and the only way it's going to go away, is when the vast majority of California cities overturn their own bans, allow the cannabis supply chain, and then it's simple economics, supply and demand. And then as soon as they open up all these cities, they start coming on board, then it'll be like, hey, wait a minute, I'm not paying double, triple the rent. I can go to the city over there. All right, that city's offering a better tax rate. And they're not jacking up prices over here. People just want to get the business in. Until that happens, we unfortunately probably have turned away more business in the first few weeks of this year than ever before, because we're telling people, don't give us money until you find property. I mean, we've busted the bubble. We've made people cry because we're telling them that if you want to, you know, don't kill the messenger. This is what the law is. If you want to be legal and not be outed from the legal system for the rest of your life, you can't get caught with a marijuana licensing violation. And the only way only way that happens is you get a premise in a legal city, and landlord says, okay, you get your local permit, and then you can get your state permit, and that's how it works.
Okay, so that means that we have 2,300. I counted them by hand on Weed Maps. I counted by hand about 2,300 stores that are in the greater Los Angeles area. And so none of them, except for the four I just said, have a license. And that license is for adult use, the ones that are in West Hollywood. I guess they also have a combined medical license as well. So
well, what they have is, in order to either produce, grow, sell, you have to have a medical license, and then you have to file a separate application for adult use license, and then you get both licenses.
Okay.
And then you have to keep separate the medical side and the adult use side.
Okay, got it. Okay, so
that works.
So
but yeah, until Georgia cities open up to the cannabis supply chain, a lot of people are just going to stay in the Wild West like it used to be. Used to be Wild West, and you know, people closed here and open up over there. It's going to be tougher to do that, and I think the enforcement is probably going to happen maybe 6 months to a year. And as the cities, implement ordinances, those cities are going to crack down on the rogue shops. The cities that have it banned don't have the money to go after the rogue shops, so there's a lot of rogue shops still out there. They're not just going to shut down. Some of them might go kicking and screaming. Some of them might take the chance. I don't care. I won't be in the legal industry, so I don't care. I'm going to keep my shop open. And once the cities start allowing it, then more and more people in those cities that are rogue are going to get shut down. And that's how eventually the black market is going to get shrunk down to maybe 15, 20%.
Okay. So let me ask you this question. All right. So now we have all of these companies that are operating, and they're applying for licenses, and they are moving forward with legitimate corporations and businesses. And I just heard about a gentleman who was kidnapped and had his genitals torched. I mean, horribly, because somebody said he buried $1 million out in the desert. So my question for you, gentlemen, is banking. Where are you going to put your money?
You know, that's a good one. The state of California is thinking about a state banking system. There are a few institutions that actually will take it. They have to stay updated with the FinCEN, Financial Crimes Unit, on they have to know where the money's coming from, and there has to be a legit operation. So it can be done, but a lot of these banks are charging exorbitant fees to oversee the money that's coming in.
Now, I heard one lady told me that she, for a deposit, she pays $8,000 to deposit money in the bank.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. So what we need to do is cause a tidal wave to our elected officials at the federal level and get it off the Schedule One. It's that simple. Then banks will be fine. It won't matter. Until then, it's a, you know, it's a cluster, you know what.
You got it. Mm-hmm. But now get this. Herb Wesson, I heard, was interested in putting together a city bank, kind of like a Los Angeles City Co-op bank. That would be
correct.
Now, had you heard about that at all?
Yes, I have. I'm not sure what's gone forward with it, to be honest, but I've definitely heard of that, and I know they've talked about it at the state level too, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are bringing bags and bags and bags of money to the franchise tax board.
Yes.
I mean, it's a boom business for your armored truck services.
Well, you know, speaking of armored trucks, I had Gold Coast Distribution on, they're a friend to the show, and they're hiring U.S. Navy SEALs to ride in their armored cars so that they don't get carjacked on the 5. I can't wait till I roll up and see a cannabis truck with a Navy SEAL winking at me out of the window. I just can't wait for that, because it's happening.
You know what, Barbara, I'm sorry to bust your bubble, but I believe all transport vehicles of marijuana of any kind are nondescript.
Oh, so I won't be able to see the leaf on the side of the truck.
Correct.
I see.
Whether it's moving the weed back and forth, delivery service, whatnot, it's nondescript.
I see. Okay, so I got a question for you. Okay, so we all know that you guys are famous for absolutely for speaking to people about how to handle a cop stop. So could you give us in 2 minutes or less, I see the sirens behind me. What do I do? I'm being pulled over.
You, first of all, immediately pull over to the right when it's safe. You turn off your engine. You roll down your window just enough to pass your license, insurance, and registration through.
Which you should have handy, hopefully, in the visor so you don't have to reach anywhere.
And you put your hands on the steering wheel so the cop knows where your hands are. The cop comes up to you, and he's going to ask you any number of questions. Do you know why I pulled you over? Where are you going? What are you doing? No matter what the cop asks you, your initial response is,
why did you pull me over?
And then when that cop asks questions, tells you, you pulled you over for speeding. Where are you going? What are you doing? What's that smell? How much you had to drink? You say,
not discussing my day or evening, sir.
And when he keeps asking those questions, you say,
am I being detained or am I free to go?
And if he says you're being detained, you get out of the car, you lock the door, you close it, and then you say,
I invoke the Fifth, because you have to actually say it. You can't just be silent. You have to say, I invoke the Fifth.
And then when he continues to ask questions, you simply do what?
I shut the freak up. We kept it G-rated.
Okay. Thank you for the G rating. I appreciate it. But you know what? That is an education, and we really appreciate that, because a lot of people, now I'm from the Bay Area, and we have something called Berkeley Cop Watch. Well, it was really actually brought on by a neighborhood watch, which then became, believe it or not, the Black Panthers, which was in the 60s where people were being profiled, because what happened was they brought the task force from Los Angeles up to Oakland, and they were doing these stops, random stops of cars. Do you believe that in this new environment, because I drive down the street and I smell skunks everywhere, do you believe, and now if my window's down and the police pull me over, do you believe that he's going to think that I'm under the influence? I mean, how can he determine that?
Well, that's why our script is what we just went through. It's called is so important, because for one, smell in California is no longer probable cause to search or detain you. So if you had just smoked in your car, which if it was not operating, you legally can smoke in your car that's not operating.
Meaning if I go out to my driveway, my car is parked. What if it's on my driveway? What if it's in the street parked in front of my house?
It doesn't matter, as long as it's not operating.
Okay.
Or within 1,000 feet from a school or youth facility.
Or in a non-smoking zone. So if you're parked in a non-smoking zone, you shouldn't be there smoking anything. So let's say you're not in that zone. You're in your car. You're in a parking lot of a grocery store, and you come out and go, you know what, I want to take a couple hits before I take off. That was a long shopping trip, and your car's not off, or your car's off. You're legally, you can do it. And then you put it in the trunk, you take off, cop pulls you over for a traffic infraction, and then asks you, what's that I smell? And that's where people go awry. I smoked before I left. I didn't smoke while I was driving. I smoked an hour ago when I was at home. I didn't smoke when I was driving. All of a sudden, you're going in for a DUI, and if you stuck to the script, because they're going to assume you're high, which is not the standard. The standard is they have to prove you were impaired. So if you don't say anything, let them do what they're going to do because they smelled it. We can either get it dismissed because they used the not probable cause. They used smell, which is not probable cause anymore. So everything gets thrown out after that. Or the worst case scenario is we push in the trial and they have to prove you were impaired. They pulled you over for a left turn lane violation, not for swerving and driving 20 miles an hour in a 50 or whatnot. They can't prove impairment. It's very, very difficult. Unless you're really that high and swerving all over the place, then they should take you in and you should be arrested for that. But, I mean, being high, like they have a sign, don't drive high. I mean, that's a misnomer as well, because what is high? I mean, that's another issue that we face every day when we medicate on social media and we go ahead and bat our business. Like, I smoked a joint before I talked to you.
Right.
But commercial last night, three times, showing a joint being lit up and saying that it's a DUI to smoke and drive.
Well, and actually, it's not. Well, there's a ticket now. Before, there wasn't. So if they see you smoking while you're driving, instead of before, all they had was a DUI, which is hard. Now they can actually give you just a ticket, $75 infraction, for smoking while you're driving. But they have to see you, and that's anybody in the car, passenger, driver alike.
So there was a lady, I don't want to say her name, she wanted to get involved in this business. So what she did was, is she purchased, she was smart. She decided to buy an abandoned building in broken down San Bernardino. She refitted the building. It was next to the police department. I don't think that was maybe the best place to put it, but that's what she did. She went through all she needed to have her cultivation facility there. I guess the Edison bill came out. It was $67,000. The police were tipped off that maybe there's a grow going on. So then they waited until like 10 days before January 1st. This was found out in August. But right around the 17th of December, they decided to raid the place. She had everything in position from her own security, which was armed, which is part of what the process of being legal. She had everything inside of her building, and she was compliant with the expectation of applying for the permits and the licensing. They went to her home in Pacific Palisades and arrested her. What do you gentlemen have to say to that?
Well, if they had come to our office, we'd have said, you better be prepared to have your hands cuffed. We've had people from Cota de Casa come in, housewives, want to get into the business, and we usually turn them around and send them on their merry way when we say, you want to turn around and get handcuffed. Because prior to 1118, what she was doing, if she was set up as a cooperative corporation and doing it for patients and doing it right and having a real business, you can defend criminal charges. But it was illegal to do that in San Bernardino. It's a banned county. And what we tell all our clients, and it's really unfortunate, but I don't care how compliant you think you were prior to 1118, if you don't have a city permit, You need to shut down and get property, get a city permit, get a state license, and then you can operate again. Until then, you're at huge risk of getting raided.
Okay, well, I got a question. Because I've been to the Cannabis Cup. I've been to High Times, their friend to the show. Blazers Cup, went to that. All at the county fairgrounds over there. And it was a fair of marijuana. I've never seen anything quite like it. I was scared to death, as I
we call those the drug dealing swap meets.
Exactly. Now I know that social consumption is not legal, and now not only is it not legal, but so is, you just said, San Bernardino is not, like, so how does somebody take 25 pounds on their pickup truck and run it over there for 3 days in their booth? How does that happen?
Lack of enforcement.
Well, that's what it was. Now it's a whole different ball game, because I don't know how the events are going to go on with only a handful of vendors. Because before, it was any Tom, Dick, or Harry could get their little thing, and they get their booth, and they can sell their wares like a farmer's market. Now they can't do that anymore. They have to. An event organizer has to have a license. It has to be at county fairgrounds. And then that allows a licensee who has retail or adult use, who can only sell it at the licensed premise, can now sell it at the state fairground booth. But the only way to get it there is through a distributor. And only those licensed people can sell there. And there are very few of those. So I don't know what they're going to do.
Wow, that is a mouthful. Well, you know what? I could talk to you gentlemen. I mean, we need a part two. But I tell you sure. What, if you would agree to come back to our show, like let's say in the next 60 days, just to give us an update, we would love that. I want to congratulate you on being in the LA Times recently. And I would like our listening audience, which we know is the World Wide Web, tell us a little bit about where they can contact you, what you are doing in terms of your Cannabis 101. How do you find that? And how do people follow you?
So, okay, so Cannabis Talk 101 is the radio show we co-host with our co-host and founder of the talk show, Blue. It's on 101.5 FM in the greater Orange County area. It streams live on kociradio.com every Wednesday at 6 p.m. and repeats on Sundays at 6 p.m. You can also find every episode and segment on Dash Radio under our Cannabis Talk 101 channel. And we also have our website, popbrothersatlaw.com. We always take free consultations. You can call us 855-WASS-LAW. That's WASSLAW. And although we are California attorneys, if you need something in another state, we have a nice network of attorneys that we can refer to. And of course, our big claim to fame, our Instagram. You can follow us at Pot Brothers at Law, and you've got to put underscores in between each word, pot underscore brothers underscore at underscore law. And there you will find our daily tips, information. And we also try to have a little fun, as we've been told recently, people believe we are the only attorneys in the world out there on social media actively smoking, dabbing, and showing that we use cannabis and we are professionals and we get the job done.
Well, you know what? There it is, folks. Now, everybody knows that we bring you the cutting edge truth in the cannabis industry. I am so happy to have had my friend Mark Wasserman, his brother, my new friend Craig Wasserman, on our show. You've heard how to contact them. I want to thank you, gentlemen, for the work you're doing, and I want to thank you for being on the show. And everybody, you have been listening to LA Miracle Cure, and it is on America Out Loud.